for me is far from clear. But if you are allowed, and if you please, you'll tell us whether some way out of here lies near us on the right, so we may seize our chance to leave without a plea for aid from black angels, that they may come to lift us up and fly us out." The friar made the following reply. "You were adrift in all your estimates. Help is nearby, much closer than you hope. From the great wall, a ridge runs inward, cutting through the sky of every valley, so it links them all, except that at this one it lies a wreck. You climbed the ruins piled against the side, a staircase starting level with this deck." My leader stood with bent head, mortified. "The one that hooks the sinners over there sold us a bill of goods," he said, whereat the friar grinned. "Yes, wasn't that unfair? I think I once heard in Bologna that the devil sometimes has resort to vice. He has been known to say what isn't true. I've heard he isn't really very nice." My leader strode on. As his anger grew, his stride grew greater. Led by his sweet heels, I left the souls who weigh the way guilt feels. Canto 24. In that part of the young year when the sun enters Aquarius to comb the hair it shakes loose, and the long nights have begun to turn south, when the frost is lying there, a copy of its sister, the pure snow, except the pen's point soon grows blunt, the white is warmed away, and he, the shepherd, so annoyed when he woke up to the chill sight of snowy fields and thought he could not go for fodder, slapped his thigh and back inside his house went to and fro to curse his fate like some poor wretch with doubt in every stride of what to do next. But the altered state strikes him when he goes out again. The rime has melted. The whole world has changed its face, and hope returned in such a little time. He grasps his staff, and out into the place that shines no longer white, he drives his sheep to pasture. Thus my master hurt my heart, because his brow was clenched and furrowed deep, but then the poultice came to soothe the smart. For when we reached the ruined bridge, right then he turned to me with that sweet smile I'd seen when first I saw the mountain's foot. And when he'd made a plan and picked the ruins clean with his glance, he spread wide his arms for me and held me. And as one who works and weighs and reckons and provides beforehand, he, while lifting me to one rock, bent his gaze upon another's suitability to make its top a step. "Take that one there. But first," he said, "see if it takes your weight." A mantle here was not the thing to wear. Though he was light and I was pushed, a great effort was needed going crag to crag, and if the slope had been long on that dike as on the other, he'd have seen me flag. For him, I don't know what that climb was like. Since all of Malebolge dips towards the inmost pit, the lie of every trench makes one side low. Where the last stone affords a broken-off arrival point, this bench I sat on with lungs bursting through my chest from pain and thought, "No further." "Now you must," my guide said, "quell the slothful urge to rest. A swansdown seat and a soft blanket just keep you from fame, without which no one who consumes his life leaves more trace in the world than smoke in air and foam on water do. Therefore arise, with your soul's flag unfurled above your fear, for so your soul prevails in every battle if the body's weight can't sink it, and your enterprise entails a longer stair yet to a higher state. Just to have left these spirits here is not sufficient. If you understand me now, do what you must. Get more than you have got." I rose then, trying hard as I knew how to prove my breath was easy, and said, "Go, for I am strong and brave." We took our way up through the jagged narrows, twisted, slow, of this ridge steeper than the last. To stay alert, or seem to, I talked as we went, at which a voice from the next ditch was heard, unable to say clearly what it meant. But I, up on the transverse arch's crown already, knew that anger moved his speech. Over the dark I bent my keen gaze down. The dark went down too far for eyes to reach the bottom. So I questioned, "What if we go on to the next bank and down its wall? Because from here my hearing's doomed to be one long misunderstanding, and for all I see when I look down, there's nothing there." "My one reply," my guide said, "is to do what you suggest. The answer to a fair request should be the silent deed." We two descended at the bridge's end, which meets the eighth bank, and from there the ditch was clear to my view, and the memory defeats my words and chills my blood with coiling fear. I saw a writhing mass of every kind of serpent, and each kind was very strange. Lucan in Libya could never find their equal in those hot sands to arrange his catalogue of snakes to seize the mind, including those with one head at each end. No, desert lands have no plagues on this scale for poisoned multiplicity. Nor send to Ethiopia to see the like, nor sail the Red Sea searching all its regions. These, for cruelty and squalor, were as bad as snakes can get. And through this heaving sleaze ran people naked, terrified, who had no hope of hiding place or to be made invisible by heliotrope. Their hands were tied behind with snakes, which slickly laid their heads and tails between the thighs, leg bands knotted in front. And look! A serpent sprang on one who shared our bank and hit the point where neck meets shoulder, and the serpent's fang started a fire precisely at the joint which spread as fast as you write I or O with just one stroke, until he sank to ash, and on the ground the dust reversed its flow, gathered itself together in a flash. He was himself again. So they concur, all the great sages, that the phoenix dies, and straightway is born again, in her 500th year, and in that time denies herself all herbs and grain. All she will eat is tears of frankincense and balsam, and spikenards and myrrh supplying her winding sheet, and just as one who can no longer stand, but falls not knowing if the devil's force has dragged him down, or else some vital block that binds a man has been the secret source of weakness, when he rises, stares in shock around him, rattled by his pain and sighs, such was this sinner when he rose again. How stern the power of God that can devise such and so many blows for vengeance! Then my leader asked him who he was. I quote, "From Tuscany I came down like the rain not long ago into this feral throat. A mule I was, a brute I would remain. A man's life didn't please me in the least. I started as a bastard, led the blacks in my town. Vanni Fucci, called the Beast, is my name. If you go back on my tracks, you'll reach my den, Pistoia." Then I said to my guide, "Tell him not to slip away, and ask him what crime weighed so on his head to thrust him down this far, for the display I saw was of a man of rage and blood." The sinner heard, and did not feign, but set his mind and look on me, his face a flood of shame. He said, "I feel more anguish yet, that you have caught me in the misery you see me in than I felt then when I was taken from the other life. For me to leave your question without due reply is not allowed. Down this far I am brought because once in the sacristy of fine adornments when I stole, I had the thought of pinning that crime blasphemously mine on someone innocent. Such was my sport. So now you know. But lest my pain has been too sweet a sight, if ever you get out of these dark regions, add to what you've seen the sound of what I say. Be in no doubt. I speak to you, the white Guelph Florentine. These things will happen. First, Pistoia will thin out the blacks, Then Florence will revive her people and her ways. Mars will fulfill his role for her and find a black to strive. From Val di Magra he will ride to kill against Pistoia's whites. Nicknamed the Mist, he'll bring sad clouds with him, a bitter storm of battle in Piceno's field. The list of horrors will grow long, and the fierce form of flame in a black sky touch every white. I tell you this to haunt you in the night. Canto 25. The thief raised both his hands when he said this, two fingers up from each the figs, and cried, "You get it, God? You know what you can kiss?" From then on all the snakes were on my side, for one looped round his neck as if to say, "You've said enough." Another, as before, bound up his arms and in its usual way attached itself in front so he no more could make a move that brought them into play. Pistoia, ah, Pistoia! Why not vow to burn yourself to ashes and live on, no wicked moment more than you do now, you that are worse than your bad seed long gone, colleagues of Catiline? Through all of hell, its darkest circles, I saw not one shade so arrogant, not even he that fell at Thebes, Capaneus. So this one made his exit, speaking not another word. A raging centaur came past on parade. His shout was of the pitch that peaks and breaks. "Where is he, then, the crook?" I have not heard even Maremma has so many snakes as he had on his croup as high as where the horse form sleeps and human form awakes. Behind his shoulders, high up near the hair, a dragon spread its wings and set on fire, sending its breath down while it stayed up there, whomever it might meet. My master said, "That's Caucus, who beneath the Aventine made many times a bloodbath for the dead, and from his brother takes a different line, another road, because he stole by fraud a nearby herd and lured it to his cave. The herd belonged to Hercules, his lord, who heard the cattle lowing, and so gave Caucus, to end his mean streak at a stroke, a lesson with his club. 100 blows, not 10, were felt." But while my leader spoke, the centaur had gone by, and there arose 3 shades beneath us that we didn't see, till they said, "Who are you?" At which we ceased to speak, our thoughts on them entirely. I didn't know them, but by chance, increased by time, one had to name another. "Where," one of them asked, "has Chanfa stopped?" That said, to keep my guide's attention focused there, I held my finger upright so it led, touching from chin to nose. If you are slow to credit, reader, what I tell you now, no wonder. I, who saw it to be so, scarcely believe it still, but this is how it happened. While I kept the 3 in view, a serpent with 6 legs ran up in front of one of them and stuck to him like glue all over, so he bore this sudden brunt. His paunch was seized on by the middle feet, his arms by the front ones, while through his face fangs piercing either cheek were keen to meet. His thighs were where the hind feet found their place, and in between his thighs the tail was poked and stretched up over his behind. No tree was ever yet with ivy tighter cloaked than this shade with the beast disgustingly adapting limbs that hid the limbs they choked. And then, as if they both were hot wax, they stuck to each other in a dreadful blend. Their colors mingled and went either way, so both were one, with neither start nor end, and how they looked before you couldn't say from seeing what they had become. Just so, across the paper, close before the flame, we see a kind of colored darkness go. Not black yet, but the white dies just the same. The other 2 looked on, and each cried, "My Agnello, how you've changed! You are not 2, you are not 1. For once they didn't lie. 2 heads were 1. 1 face shared in plain view. Only what two had not lost, and one pair of arms was made from four arms, and two thighs, one belly, and one chest were strangely there, shapes never seen before. When what had been was blotted out, all former features gone, the gross deformity that seemed to mean two things but nothing clear slowly moved on. Still neither here nor there, but in between. As does the lizard in the worst dog days, seem lightning when it streaks from hedge to hedge to someone trudging under the sun's blaze, so suddenly appeared from our view's edge a small and fiery vivid serpent, black as peppercorn. Its path seemed set to strike the bellies of the other two. Its track soon fixed on one, and by its navel, like our own part for receiving nourishment when in the womb, it stuck to him, and then fell down before him and stretched out. Intent on what had struck him, he, the stricken, when he stared, said nothing. Silent, he stood still and yawned, as if by sleep or fever sapped of understanding, energy, and will. He and the serpent eyed each other, rapt in one another's gaze, and also in the smoke that from the beast's mouth in a jet came pouring out to mingle with its twin that poured from the man's mouth, so their smoke met. Let Lucan now be silent when he prates about Sabellus and Nasidius, snake-bitten soldiers. Better that he waits to hear of this. The same for Ovid, who tells us how Cadmus turned into a snake, and Arethusa, fleeing nymph, changed too into a fountain. True it is, I take no umbrage. Ovid doesn't once transmute two natures face to face as they exchange their substance. By an impulse more acute, these two were moved, the one to rearrange its tail into a fork, the wounded one to blend its feet, the thighs together pressed, so close that soon the joinery was done, with no mark left by which you could have guessed at separateness. And then the serpent's tail, divided as it was now, took the shape of human legs. Its skin turned soft and frail, while the others hardened. Armpits were agape to take in shrinking arms. The beast's front paws that had been short grew long to match the pace of shrinkage, and the hind paws with their claws twisted together made the part men place away from view. His part, unbound by laws, put forth a pair of feet. While smoke involved them both with novel colors and supplied more hair here, and yet there the hair dissolved. One rose, one fell, but neither turned aside the baleful gaze beneath which each had gained the other's looks. He that was now upright lifted his face towards his temples, strained the skin till it expelled from being tight the excess matter that would form the ears from both cheeks. And then from the stuff still left, there grew, as if the seconds now were years, a nose, and from the mouth that lipless cleft, lips of due size appeared. He that lay flat advanced his snout, and then the ears slid back into his head like snail's horns, and then that which spoke for him, his tongue, began to crack and split in two. The other thing's tongue split already, unified. Smoke ceased to flow. The shade-turned brute fled hissing in a fit along the ditch, the talking one not slow to follow, nor to aim the human spit that snakes don't like. But then he turned his new shoulders on that one and said to the third, the one unchanged, I would have Boisso do what I have done, and do it word for word. Run on all fours along this very road. The dross of level 8 I had now seen. The dregs, the ship's least valuable load, had seen it change and interchange and mean one thing and then another. Should my pen fail in its task, let newness be my plea. And if my eyes were getting tired by then, my wits confused, still it was clear to me that though they fled in secret, these two were Puccio the cripple, sole one of the three companions privileged never to incur the agony of being thus reborn. And he who brought to you the sword and spur, Gavier, trading his wrath for your scorn, Francesco Cavalcanti. name to mourn. Canto 26. Florence, rejoice! For you are grown so great, your wings beat proudly over land and sea, and even hell proclaims your rich estate, speaking your name abroad, your destiny. Among your citizens I just found 5 to shame me that I'd shared their place of birth. Their skill at theft, when they were still alive, brought you no honor. What their schemes were worth you'll find, if near the dawn our dreams come true, when Prato rises up against your greed, a craving felt by other places too. The sooner done the better, and indeed, done years ago, it had been overdue. It must be done, or it will weigh the more on me as I grow older. We moved then, and on the stairs the rocks had made before for our descent, my leader climbed again and drew me up. We went the winding way, among the rocks and splinters, and the foot made no advance without the hand in play. I grieved then, and I grieve now, when I put my mind to what I saw, and I rein in my powers more than usual, lest they run where virtue guides them not, and I begin to curse the gift my lucky star, or one yet higher, gave me. Count the fireflies, the peasant sees when he rests on the hill. In the season when the one who lights our eyes, and all the world least hides its face, and will soon sink to give the flies place to the gnat, the lights he sees along the valley floor might well be glowing in the vineyards that he gathers grapes in, or the fields that wore him out from tilling them that day. The same number of lights were strewn in the 8th ditch, gleaming, so I could see them when I came within sight of its base. The night looked rich, a lake of lights, and each light was a flame. Elias, whom the bears avenged when he was baited by small boys, once watched it flare Elijah's chariot majestically, drawn skyward when its horses pawed the air. No matter how he fixed it with his eyes, he made out nothing but the flame alone. He saw a little shining cloud arise, the glow surrounding where the fire had flown. Just so each flame here moves along the throat of this ditch, and none shows it is a theft of some vile sinner's form we may not note. I stood there on the bridge above the cleft, grasping a rock as I stretched out to sea. For sure I would have fallen had I not held on, and then my leader, seeing me look so intent, said, "All these flames are what false counselors must wear and be burned by." "Master," I said, "I'm sure now, having heard you speak of what I guessed, already I wanted to ask before you said a word about that fire divided at its peak, as if it were the pyre of those 2 sons of Oedipus who killed each other. Speak of who is in there. Are there 2? Which ones?" He answered, "2 are punished there inside. Ulysses is in there, and Diomed. In vengeance now together they are tied, as one in wrath. They groan for pain and dread within the flame, and for the clever plan of the gift-horse that opened up the gate for the noble seed from which great Rome began to first burst forth, and in that fiery state they rue their craft by which Deidamia gave them Achilles, and they feel the heat for what they stole from Troy and took so far, the stricken city sought its own defeat. Pallas Athena's image. There they are. The thieves of the Palladium. In there." "If they can speak," I told my guide, "I pray, if they can speak inside these lights they share, this light, I pray that you might let me stay. May it avail 1,000 times this prayer, until that flame with double horn comes near. You see, I bend towards it with desire." And he, "Your prayer deserves praise, never fear, and therefore I will grant what you require. But guard your tongue. I'll be the one to speak. I understood what you would like to know, and they might scorn your language. They were Greek." After the flame had reached the time and place my guide thought fitting, thus he spoke to it. "You that are 2 within 1 fiery space, if while I lived you ever thought me fit to be respected when I wrote of you, If I was worthy of you, whether much or little, when I did my best to do you justice with my heightened lines, let such devotion from me sway you to stand still, while one of you tells where, when he was lost, he went to die. Hearing my master's will, the larger of the flaming horns was tossed and murmured as if by the wind misled. Its point waved to and fro, as if it were a tongue that spoke, a voice thrown out that said, "When I left Circe, having lived with her more than a year in Italy, before Aeneas got there, no love for my son, no duty to my father, and what's more, no love I owed Penelope, the one who would have been most glad, could overcome in me the passion that I had, to gain experience of the world, and know the sum of virtue, pleasure, wisdom, vice, and pain. Once more I set out on the open sea with just one ship, crewed by my loyal men, the stalwart who had not deserted me. As far as Spain I saw both shores, and then Morocco, and Sardinia, and those numberless islands that the sea surrounds. But men grow old and slow as the time goes, and so did we, and so we reached the bounds of voyaging, that narrow outlet marked by Hercules, so nobody should sail beyond. And anybody thus embarked knows, by those pillars, he is sure to fail. Seville on my right hand, I left behind Theuta on my left. Brothers, I said, dangers uncounted, and of every kind, fit to make other sailors die of dread, you have come through, and you have reached the west, and now our senses fade, their vigil ends. They ask to do the easy thing and rest. But in the brief time that remains, my friends, would you deny yourselves experience of that unpeopled world we'll find if we follow the sun out into the immense unknown? Remember now your pedigree. You were not born to live as brutes. Virtue and knowledge are your guiding lights. I gave with these words such an impulse to my crew for enterprise that I could not, to save my life, have held them back. We flew on oars like wings, our stern in that mad flight towards the morning. Always left we bore. Stars of the other pole we saw at night, and hours so low that from the ocean floor it never once arose. 5 times the light had kindled and then quenched beneath the moon, since first we ventured on our lofty task, when we could see a mountain, though not soon could see it clearly. Distance was a mask that made it dim. But it was high, for sure. Higher than anything I'd ever seen. It climbed into the sky. Who could be more elated than we were? Had not we been plunged straight away into deep sorrow, for the new land gave rise to a storm that struck our ship's forepart. 3 times the water led us in a circle, 4th time out of luck. Stern high, bow low, we went in. Overhead, somebody closed the sea, and we were dead. Canto 27. The flame already was erect and still, saying no more as it prepared to go, according to my gentle poet's will, when with a sound that it was hard to know the meaning of, arrived another flame behind it, and that strange noise drew our gaze toward the new fire's point from which it came, a blurred voice at the apex of the blaze. Just as that bull designed in Sicily to roast the tyrant's victims bellowed first with the voice of him by whom it came to be, he shaped it with his file, wishing the worst for all that it would kill. His fate was just as that bull, although it was of brass, cried with its victims' voices so it must have seemed thrust through with pain, no words could pass straight from this fire, no matter how unstrung. But after they had come up through the flame, all the vibrations that had moved the tongue were given to the point to sound the same. "You there to whom I speak," we heard him say, "who just spoke Lombard, saying, 'Let it wait, the rest of it, time to be on your way. Though I have come perhaps a little late, please don't be irked to stay and talk a while. You see, it doesn't bother me, and I am burning. If just now into this vile, blind world you fell from Italy on high, the sweet land where I got the guilt I bring down here, then tell me of the Romagnols. Do they have peace or war? For I still cling to memories of land that climbs and rolls, the mountings looming over everything between Urbino and the final height that sets the Tiber free. I was still bent to listen when my leader, with a light touch to my side, said, "You know what he meant, so speak to him. He comes from Italy." I knew my answer, which without delay I gave. "O soul, kept here in secrecy, you know there's not, nor ever was, a day when your Romagna's tyrants in their hearts were not at war. But I saw none who were overtly so when I left. In those parts Ravenna stands as usual. Over her the eagle of Polenta broods. Its wings kept Cervia covered. Forlì, that once bore a long siege and reduced the French to strings of blood and guts, now finds itself once more beneath the green claws. Both the young and old mastiffs that ruled in Rimini and made a shambles of Montagna take and hold and tear up with their fangs all those they flayed. Two Malatestas of Verrucchio, dogs on the loose, Faenza, Imola, bow down to one who, as the seasons go, changes his party, and his markings are White Lair, Young Lion, by the Savio bathed on its flank, Cesena in between mountains and plain, to tyranny one day, and liberty the next, will always lean. But who you are, I now beg you to say, so your name in the world may keep its place. Be not more slow to send your words my way than I to you for courtesy and grace." True to its usual manner, the flame roared a while, then moved its sharp point here and there and gave breath. "And if I thought now to afford an answer to one bound to breathe the air again in the fair world, this flame would stand with no more movement. But since none return alive from these depths, if I understand correctly what I hear, how could I earn more infamy that I have now? A man of war I was at first, and then to make amends, or so I thought, I had a plan to be a friar of Francis and to take the cord. Indeed, it would have all come true, but Boniface, the great priest, give him hell, pulled me back in. The things I used to do, I did again, the old sins. It were well that you should know the how and why. When I still wore my mother's gift of flesh and bone, my deeds were not the lion's. I was sly, a fox, all wiles and ways to slink alone, unseen, I knew, and practice hidden arts, so everywhere on earth they were renowned. Then when I came to where our youth departs, and men should strike their sails and make a round heap of the ropes, that which before had been so pleasing grieved me. With repentance then, confession, I turned friar, I was clean. Ah, misery! For then the worst of men, the prince of the new Pharisees, at war right there in Holy Rome, and not with Jews or Saracens, but Christians who before had neither conquered Acco nor would choose to fight the Saladin against the law, forbidding mercenaries, in despite of his own holy order's sacred chair, and my cord of devotion best worn tight to make the wearers thin from what they wear, and Constantine brought back Sylvester from Soracte with a cure for leprosy. So this man came to me for a nostrum to cure the fever of his pride. To me, Guido da Montefeltro. While he sought my counsel, I was silent, for his speech seemed profligate with drink, or so I thought. He spoke again, "Trust me, and let me reach your heart. Henceforth your sins are all absolved forever. All you have to do is teach my troops what stratagems might be involved in flattening Palestrina, the stronghold of the Colonna. That the power is mine to lock and unlock heaven, you've been told, and know well. Know, too, that my sign of office, the two keys that Celestine did not hold dear, I do." And thus his weight of argument, despite what it might mean, drove me to where my silence seemed the state of most offense. "And so, father," I said, You cleanse me of the sin which I must now embrace, and in the scant observance spread from lavish promise you will soon endow your lofty seat with triumph. Thus, as soon as I was dead, and Francis came, a black cherub told him, you can't grant him the boon of taking him with you. He must come back with me among my minions, for he gave fraudulent counsel, and from that day on I had him by the hair until the grave. For no crime not repented of is gone, nor can repentance and the will to do an evil coexist. They contradict each other. I, poor broken wretch, was too shocked not to tremble when he laid his strict arrest on me and said, well, now you know, I'm a logician. Down to Minos born. 8 times I saw him flex his tail to throw a coil around his rough back, a tail torn by his own teeth, such was his rage, and he, this wicked one is for the fire of thieves, and therefore I am lost here, as you see. And clothed like this I go as one who grieves in burning bitterness. And speechlessly the morning fire departed, pointed tip, twisting and tossing. I and my guide, moved on with constantly adjusted grip over the ridge to where, on its far side, the arch begins that spans the ditch where they who gain by sowing discord come to pay. Canto 28. Even with fluent words and with the tale told often, who could tell of all the blood and wounds that I now saw? All tongues would fail, for certain. Overwhelmed with such a flood of fact, our speech and memory can stand only so much. If all those stricken folk in southern Italy, that fateful land, who once bewailed their bloodshed by the stroke of Trojan sword, could only be one band again. But they knew also the long war with Carthage. When the golden Roman rings were piled in heaps by Hannibal, a store that Livy notes true always in these things, and if to all of these were added more, the ones who suffered grievous blows when they resisted Robert Guiscard, and all those whose bones at Ciperano to this day still lie in heaps, and everybody knows the southerners broke faith. And it was hard. By Tagliacozzo that Alado won purely by strategy, his troops unscarred, but on his victim's fearful work was done. And if some were to show limbs that were cut, and others were to show the limbs they lost, it would be horrible and endless, but nothing beside the mess that had been tossed to fester in the 9th ditch. Not a cask, through loss of end-board or of stave, could gape like one I saw, who from below the mask of pain that was his face but held its shape, was torn wide open right down to the crack that farts. Between his legs his entrails hung, intestines on display, and the foul sack that turns the food we swallow into dung. While I was all eyes, he looked back at me, and with his hand he further spread his breast, saying, behold, I split myself. You see Mahomet mangled, and there go the rest before me. First Ali, my son-in-law, his face from chin to forehead sliced in two, then everyone who in the life before sowed scandal, schism, and therefore must do time twice. Thus we who split things are now split. There is a devil in behind us here, who cruelly cares for us, and sees to it that all who make the circuit and are near to healing as they come around again, with closing wounds on this sad thoroughfare, will meet the cleaving sword's edge there and then in front of him. But who are you up there, who lingers on the ridge? Do you delay in fear of penalties for what you are accused of? Neither has he reached the day of death, my master said. Nor yet by far does guilt bring him to torment. But to give him full experience, he must be brought down here by me, I who no longer live, but know the way through hell from its forecourt through circle after circle to the end. And as you hear me speak, this is as true. More than 100 heard this from my friend, and stopped to look at me, their wonder too intense for pain to be remembered. Soon, perhaps, you'll see the sun again. Tell Fra Dolcino, then, that down here where the moon gives all the light, he surely won't be far behind me if he doesn't stock supplies of food against the fall of mountain snow that just might give Novara the surprise victory it shouldn't have. All set to go, with one foot raised, Mahomet said all that, then set it on the ground and left. Then one with pierced throat, nose cut off exactly at the eyebrow's bottom line, and one ear done away with, stopped with all the rest to gaze in wonder. And before them all he cleared his windpipe, which outside wore a red glaze, and said, "In one piece you have here appeared. For guilt does not condemn you that I met, unless too close a likeness tricks my brain, above in Italy. Please don't forget, if ever you return to the sweet plain that from Vercelli slopes to Macabo, Piero da Medicina. Make it known to Fano's two chief men, make sure they know Guido and Angiolello. They'll be thrown out of their ship and drowned. This comes to pass near La Cattolica, through treachery of a foul tyrant. No crime of this class was ever seen by Neptune in the sea from Cyprus to Majorca, whether done by pirates or by Greeks. That traitor who sees with one eye, the young mastiff that none can challenge now in Rimini, and you already know that someone here would like not to have seen that city, will contrive to bring them to a meeting, and then strike, in such a way that they will not arrive. Nor need to pray against Foccara's gale, that deadly wind they'll never have to face. And I, point out to me, and tell his tale, the one for whom the mere sight of that place, Rimini, was so bitter. Give me this, if you would have me carry back your news into the world." Not minded to dismiss a threat to all that he had left to lose, he reached out sideways to another's jaw and forced it open, crying, "Here he stands, and does not speak. Expelled from Rome by law, he fled to Caesar in the Gallic lands, and told him that delay for one prepared meant loss, and he should cross the Rubicon. And by that bad advice, war was declared, and glory won, but unity was gone. The Tribune Curio, and how aghast he seemed, his tongue slit in his throat, the man who spoke so boldly back there in the past. But now, with both hands missing, one began to lift his torn stumps through the murky air, so blood besmirched his face that said, 'You will remember Mosca also, who was there in Florence to say something fit to kill the members of two families, one his own.' A deed that's done is over." So I said, and should be here for saying that alone, for still today the Tuscans count the dead. I added, "Death to all your stock," at which, with sorrow heaped on sorrow, off he went, crazy with grief. But I stayed in the ditch to watch the ruined people, how they spent their time. And then I witnessed such a sight as I would fear to tell of, had I not more facts held in reserve than I now write in my account of it. But I have got my conscience here to bolster me, the good companion that can render a man bold under the breastplate of his pure manhood. I saw, and seem to see still. All I've told is true, and this is, too, a headless thing that walked with all the rest of the sad band. It held its severed head by the bunched string of its own hair, and swung it with its hand as if it were a lantern. The head stared at us, and, "Woe is me," was what it said. A light unto itself, the two were paired, the shining lantern and the bright-eyed head, finding a path as only he would know who governs. When it reached us at the bridge, where we stood so high so it was just below, it exercised its awful privilege, and raised its head high with its arm, and so its words were nearer to us. These were they: "See now my grievous punishment, you there, who breathe and look as you go on your way upon the dead, See if just one despair can match mine. And so you may tell one day my news. Know now the man that I once was, Bertrand de Born, noble and troubadour, Henry, young king of England, just because of my bad counsel, made unlawful war against his father. When Ahithophel wickedly goaded Absalom to fight against King David, he did no more well. Because I parted two that had the right to crowns, I carry now my brain through hell. But sundered from the corpse that was its root, for such a crime, the punishment to suit. Canto 29. Strange wounds for many people had so made my eyes drunk, that they would have stayed and wept. But Virgil said, "How is your gaze repaid by lingering down there where they are kept, so many kinds of miserable maimed shade? You haven't done this in the other rings. You want to count them. Then consider this. That valley, its floor crawling with those things, runs 22 miles round. And did you miss the moon? Already it's beneath our feet. The time permitted to us now is short, and there is more to look at than will meet your eyes here." I said, "Had you given thought to why I looked, you might have granted me a longer stay." While I made that reply, my leader had moved on unheedingly. "I think," I added, "in that cave where I stared so intently just now, there might be a shade, my kin, who now weeps for the pain which is guilt's price down there." My master said, "From now on, you should let your thoughts remain untroubled by his fate. Let them be led by other things. Let that one stay down there. Below the bridge, he pointed up at you, and fiercely shook his finger with an air of threat. I heard a name I thought you knew. Geri del Bello, yes. But you were so wrapped up in him whose head was his to hold, as once he held Hautefort, that there was no chance you would see, even if you were told, the other one until he went." "My guide," I said, "my father's cousin is not yet avenged for the foul blow by which he died. The partners in his shame seem to forget they owe him this, and so he was outraged, and therefore, as I judge, without a word to me, he moved on, and the war he waged within himself so silently has stirred in me much more compassion than before. Did grace desired mean honor's claims deferred?" We talked of this until the nearest bluff, which shows the next ditch from the ridge. With more light on the subject, we'd have seen enough to know what it was like down to its floor. But as things were when we arrived above that final cloister so that we could see its sad lay brothers, then I had to glove my stunned ears with my hands for sympathy, because the shafts of sorrow they let loose were barbed with pity, and the grief was strange that thus assailed us. It was not diffuse. It was as if some cruel force might arrange that all the ills of all the hospitals, of all the Val di Chiana from July until September, and Maremma's halls of fever, and all those marked soon to die in sick Sardinia, should pack the walls of one crypt. So it was here, and the stink came out of it as if from limbs that rot. Down from the last ridge, down to the last brink, still keeping left we climbed, until I got a clear view downward, all the way to where justice infallible, the sovereign lord's handmaiden, marks the names and keeps in care the counterfeiters, and where she awards their punishment. No, no more sorry sight was offered by Aegina's populace, when all of it was stricken by the blight, the air so pestilential in that place, all animals down to the merest worm fell dead, and Jupiter transformed the ants to men, so that the plague should have its term, and the ancient tribes might have a second chance, or so the poets say. But this was worse, this sight along the valley, of the shades who lay in heaps, and every heap diverse. One lay face down, One made his shoulder blades the bed frame for another, and one moved on hands and knees along that dreadful road. Speechless, and step by step we went. They proved the sick. They had no strength to bear the load if they should try to raise themselves. We saw, we heard. I saw two sitting propped against each other, like pans set next door to one another, so the cold is stopped from getting in between, and these two wore thick scabs from head to foot. No curry comb was ever plied by stable boy urged on, by master eager to ride out from home, or boy awake too long with patience gone, as were the ranking nails of these two souls against their own skins and the endless rage of that itch no emollient controls. And bit by bit, but always at the stage of just beginning, their nails scraped them free of scabs. Just as the knife strips off the scales of bream, or fish with larger finery. But cleaning fish succeeds. This always fails. My leader said to one of these two, "You, whose fingers take your armor off one link of chain mail at a time, and sometimes do the work of pincers, tell us what you think. Are there Italians here? Your nails may toil forever at the task that they have now." "Italians both, we who made you recoil at our disfigurement. But tell us how you're here to ask this," said one as he wept. And then my leader, "I am one who goes from level down to level and have kept this living man with me, and he well knows my mission is to show him hell." Then they no longer could support themselves, and each turned trembling toward me. Further away, others turned also, who had heard this speech. My master drew close, saying, "Tell them what you want." And since he wanted that, I said, "So that the minds of living men may not forget your name, so it may not be dead to that sweet world and live for many years, say who you are and from what people. May your loathsome sentence not arouse false fears that you will suffer further if you say these things to me." And one replied, "Know me for Grifolino of Arezzo. I was burned by Albert of Siena. He called me magician, but that wasn't why I came here. It is true I said to him that I could rise up through the air and fly, and he, inquisitive, if somewhat dim, told me to show him how, and just because I didn't make him Daedalus, he had me burned by the Inquisitor, who was his natural father. But to this last sad ditch of the ten, I was condemned and sent for something worse. Minos, who doesn't err, got me for alchemy. That's how it went. I'm here now because that's the way things were." I to my poet, "When was there so light a people as the Sienese? By far the French are less so." Then the leprous fright who had been silent spoke, "Perhaps some are, but Stricca wasn't. He knew how to spend in moderation, so well he took weeks to bring his patrimony to an end. Then there was Niccolò. The whole world speaks of how he made the clove into the taste no one could eat without. He knew the seed, the root, the garden. He knew how to waste a fortune, and we also should pay heed to those 12 of the Spendthrift Club, the gang who dressed in gold and silver, man and horse. Their money talked, and those who loaned it sang in vain. To help that bunch in their wise course was Caccia of Asciano, who burned through a vineyard and a forest, and that great official whose sound judgment we bowed to, the dolt we called the Blunderer. But wait. You should know now who seconds you in your appraisal of the Sienese. Look hard at me, for you have seen this face before. Look past the blisters. Give me your regard, and see Capocchio in Siena cooked, without the cloves for alchemy, I made fake metals, but you know how good they looked, if you are who I think you are. My trade was falsifying nature. I did well in life, but everything is real in hell. Canto 30. When Semele was loved by Jupiter, and Juno raged because of it, and shook the house of Thebes to make it kneel to her time after time, Athamas could not brook her anger and went mad. And when he saw his wife go by, weighed down on either side with their two children, he cried, "Tooth and claw! Let's spread the nets and capture all the pride, the lioness and both the cubs as they go by." And he himself had claws that grasped one child, Lyrcus, whirling him away to dash him on a rock. She, while she clasped the other child, escaped, but just to drown. And then when fortune laid the Trojans low from their great loftiness and brought them down from where they once dared all and spurned them so that king and kingdom both lay in the dust, sad Hecuba, forlorn, enslaved, when she saw Polyxena dead, and knew that must be Polydorus on the beach, though he was hard to recognize, quite lost her mind for grief, and like a dog she barked. But no fury that fell on Thebes or Troy could find a place, no matter whom it struck, and though it tore up beasts and limbs of men, next to the cruelty that now I saw. Two pale and naked shades ran as a hog might do, loosed biting from the sty, one to assail Capocchio. Sharp fangs sunk in his next nape. It dragged him and his scabs along the ditch, whose hard floor made his itchy belly scrape. Then Grifolino, left to look and twitch beside me, said, "That goblin in a rage is Gianni Schicchi, and he deals with all that way, himself the great fraud of his age." And I to him, "So it may not befall the other one should fix its teeth in you before it makes off. Tell me who it is." And he to me, "The shade of Mira, who was by her father, as if she was his by law made concubine. She joined the sin, pretending she was someone else, as that one there who goes off took the whole world in, to get the horse that everyone aimed at. The lady of the stud, he took the name and style of Buoso di Donati, made the will, and then to prove his wily fame, faked Buoso's death in bed. Such was the trade of Gianni Schicchi, and his lasting shame. A mimic. May his luster never fade." And when those two on whom I'd kept my eyes in all their fury had at last moved on, I turned to all those ill-born others. Prize exhibit among those was one upon whom fingers might have played. He was a lute, or would have been if cut short at the groin from that part where a man is forked. Acute dropsy, by which the members cease to join in just proportion, humors are disposed the wrong way, and the belly answers not the face, decreed his lips were never closed, much like the rabid one whose thirst runs hot, so one lip curls down always to the chin, the other upward. "You that walk here free from any kind of punishment for sin through this grim world, how such a thing could be, who knows? But look! Give heed now to the grief of Master Adam. While alive, I had all that I wished. But now know no relief from thirst for just one drop of water. Mad, the mere thought makes me of the little streams that from green hills of Casentino flow down to the Arno, channels like sweet dreams run cool and wet before me, and are no frivolity, for just their image seems to parch me worse than all the ills that waste my features. The unbending justice, which examines me, and makes me breathe in haste, starts up there where I sinned, not in this ditch. There, in Romena, where I falsified, the coin stamped with the Baptist, and for that I left my body up there when I died, all burned. But even if I could be at my dearest Fonte Branda, I would give that chance for only one glimpse of the three brothers who got me into it. Two live, There's Alessandro and that other one. For me, the one who counts is Guido, and he's here already, if those angry shades who run around this ring speak truth. Why would he fear me, though? My limbs imprison me. Just 1 inch in 100 years. If I were just that light, I would have set out on the road to find him among all these misshapes. Trust my promise, though I'd have to haul my load 11 miles around and more than half a mile across. But through them, here I am. I made the golden coin a golden calf. Our florin, pride of Florence, was a sham, minted by me. 3 carats of hardware to drain its worth. And I to him. Those 2 poor wretches lying near your border there, who give off smoke the same way wet hands do in winter, who are they? And he. You care? I found them when I reined into this trough. They didn't move then, and they haven't since, nor will they stir unless my guess is off, for all eternity. You'd think she'd wince, at least, that lying wife of Potiphar, who did for Joseph. Sinon is the Greek who fooled the Trojans, and now here they are, a pair of fatal fabulists. That reek comes from their burning fever. Then Sinon, who took it ill, perhaps, that he had come to be so scorned, punched his accuser on his paunch of leather, which boomed like a drum, and Master Adam struck him in the face with his huge arm. His punch seemed no less hard, saying, Although my limbs keep me in place by their great weight, still I am not debarred in such a case from having one arm loose. Sinon replied, When you went to the fire, you hadn't, but you had it free for use when striking false coin. All you could require of strength you had then, so that's no excuse. The dropsied one said, In this you speak true. But nothing that you said was true in Troy, where simple truth was all they asked of you, a guest they had made welcome and with joy. If I spoke falsely, said Sinon, the fault was mine just once. You, with your lying coins, struck many times. You kept up an assault that earns you more than anyone who joins us here a place of honor. Thus addressed, he of the paunch replied, The horse! The horse! Remember, perjurer, the way you pressed your wooden gift on them, and let remorse plague you that all the world has come to know? And you be plagued, the Greek said, with the thirst that cracks your tongue, and with that liquid so corrupt it swells your gut into the first thing that you see, a hedge before your eyes.